This insert is brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.
Good evening, listeners. He is risen. He's alive.
Hallelujah. Amen. He is risen indeed.
Yes. And it's so lovely to be with you again the day after the Monday of Resurrection Sunday. And of course, the beautiful, the resurrection message of Jesus still reverberates in our ears during this time. It's a very special time on the Christian calendar. But the fact is that even with that message, it doesn't mean that all our problems are solved.
Yeah. Yes. And we often say in the recovery and restoration groups that our addictions never take a holiday. They never take a break. They are persistent.
Exactly.
Day out, day in, and addictions never take holidays.
And then, of course, this month we talk about, our topic is about partners, friends, and family members of addicts and how difficult it is for them. And then for sure, during this time and like even in times when the addicts' addictions don't have a holiday, partners and parents of addicts don't have a holiday either. The problems continue and persist, and therefore it's so important to draw close to Jesus. We're talking to Venita today, and she's going to tell us a little bit about this ongoing struggle in her own life as a family member and a parent. And I think also a partner or ex-partner of an addict. But at the same time, also the message of Jesus and the difference that it makes in her life.
I'm so excited to have Venita with us, Suki. And she's going to be sharing from pure personal experience.
Right.
This is not a theoretical book experiences that she's talking about. She's participated and is involved in support groups for specifically for family members and friends and so forth of those struggling with addiction. So she's speaking from her heart and from deep personal experience.
Thank you, Venita. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share with you today.
We are so excited to have you, and thank you for being vulnerable. We know it's not easy. Many of these problems are ongoing in your own life. So like Frederick said, you are talking from raw pain and experience. Yes, can you tell us a bit about your story?
Yes, I have to start with my dad. My father abused alcohol, and his problem with the abuse of alcohol became a problem for me in my mid-high school years. I was the eldest daughter, so I had younger siblings, and it was really much harder for them afterwards. My parents eventually got divorced. My dad managed to get custody of the younger siblings, three of them. And it's not that my mother was a bad person. It's just that he was a very persistent person in his personality. And you know what was, my dad was loved by everybody in the little town that I grew up with, but everybody else just loved my dad. But my mom always used to say, they don't know you. They don't know the person that we live with on weekends at home. So it was not easy. And then, of course, you know, we make inner vows when we are ignorant. And later on, we learn that that was a very bad thing to do. I made an inner vow, and I always vowed that I would not marry someone like my father. But that was exactly what happened, and that's what I did. And a huge problem from the time we got married, you know, it was really a huge problem. It's not like a progressive. It wasn't like progressive in my dad's case. It was just bad from the start, and I loved him. He was a wonderful person when he was sober, but he was not. He was like a monster when he was, you know, that devil that you see when he was drinking. So, yeah, I tried to reach out. I heard about 12-step programs. I couldn't get one close to where I lived, so I didn't go. 7 years went past. It got very bad. The addiction progressed even more. I was so desperate and powerless one night, you know, that I actually thought of murder. And a God said to me in a very audible voice, you must phone those numbers again and find out if there are groups close to you. And, you know, it was so amazing because there were groups, two groups in walking distance from where I, wow. where I lived. And that to me was God incidence. Mm-hmm. It was not coincidence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started attending recovery meetings and it was exactly what I needed. And my road started in learning and understanding what addiction was and how it affects the family, because it's a family illness, any addiction. The whole family is affected and the family needs recovery. People always think if the addicted person or the person with a gambling problem or whatever problem they have can just stop that behavior, then everything will be fine. But it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It took years for us to get where we are. So it's a journey that we need to go into when we recover.
Benita, how long was this ago? Mm-hmm. Just a moment. I just want to know, how long ago did you start joining
You know, we don't like to talk about years, but because we always say just for today, about 35 years that I've been in the program.
That's a long journey.
What I just would like to add was that my youngest son, you know, I never realized that my youngest son was going to develop a very huge problem, and that I was so grateful that I was in a 12-step program in a very... You know, I was very strong in my recovery when his problem became evident. And I was so grateful for that. My daughter also developed a problem, but she's a different kind of a person, and she addressed it, and she's been in recovery for 5 years. So her story wasn't a problem from the beginning like my son's, you know, and like my husband. My husband died at the age of 42 of a massive heart attack. And it was basically also because he didn't take care of himself. And, of course, the abuse. So that's where I are today. I still have my son in my life, and he's living with me, and it's not always easy.
Sure. Benita, you're sharing so deeply from out of your heart. Thank you so, so much. You know, as you were sharing about your dad that was loved by the community but was a monster at home, especially when he was drinking, it really reminds me that the person that you fell in love with before the addiction revealed itself is very different from the person that is addicted.
And, absolutely.
And it becomes very, very difficult to keep loving that person when he is in active addiction.
And to know how to love, what does it mean? What does it look like to love? And I don't think it often looks like to other people, like if we start doing healthy behavior towards the addict, if people look from outside, they might not think it's healthy at all. Because if you would have done that behavior with someone that's not an addiction, it might have been cruel. So what do you say about that, Benita?
Yeah, that is true. You know, people outside don't always understand. For instance, people would have said to me in the past that was not in the program would say, well, if it's so bad, why are you still there? You know, things like that. And, you know, and then getting back to my son, you know, it's your flesh and blood.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for somebody to say, kick him out, you know. Yeah, if it was your son, I would also kick him out, but he's my son. That's very hard. Yes, you know, but what helps is a 12-step program that helps us to look at ourselves, you know, to start our journey and in recovery and work on our personality, because we are not angels either.
Yeah.
We can manipulate very well and, you know, play a martyr. And all those kind of behavior patterns that we learned from a young age that we now have to get rid of. So, you know, the big thing to me was really the understanding of this addiction, to understand this person and to love them despite that. And I've always tried to tell my son, even when he behaved abusively, verbally or emotionally towards me, to tell him, you know, when I have an opportunity, that I love him, you know, and I will always love him. But I can't tolerate his bad behavior. I can't allow it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. No. Thank you very much, Vanita. You know, we're at the point of taking a break. And after the break, I would really like to hear, you know, these, the behaviors that you displayed, they came from your family of origin. And I would just like to know after the break, how is your life affected today by what you experienced in your family of origin? So let's just take a quick break and we'll be back. Thank you. Thank you, Vanita. And thank you, listeners, for being with us again. For those of you just tuning in, please stay with us. So, Vanita, I was saying that your family of origin has an enormous impact on our lives today. What was your experience with regards to this?
Definitely, especially also because I was the eldest daughter and I was the second born. The eldest one in our family was my brother. And, you know, I always tried to keep everybody happy and to do things. You know, it was like expected of me. I'm the eldest daughter, so I must take care of the siblings.
Mm.
So you become sort of a busybody and you... Because you want to help. You don't understand that you are taking control and you're trying to be controlling. So I was very grateful when I got into the 12-step program where I could learn, you know, that I was not just helpful. I was being controlling. And sometimes maybe even to the point where I would try and manipulate without even realizing that I'm manipulating, and, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm grateful. I often say to people if I'd never found a 12-step program that forced me to look at myself, to work on my character and my problems, then people probably wouldn't have liked me. And I would also try and save people. You know, I was always busy with these people that needed help and you know, trying to save the world. So I'm glad and happy to say that it changes. The longer we do are in recovery and continue doing the 12 steps and, you know, doing service and helping others, we find the balance because it's about balance to me. I'm very grateful for for the 12-step program. Amazing. So I always say if the whole world could do the 12-step program,
it'd
be a different place.
We often talk about it, and it's interesting because when people go for treatment, they often get introduced to 12-step programs, and many, many psychologists and people help people alongside to know, because the first thing is I'm powerless. The second thing is, the second step is I look to God because he's the only one that can restore my sanity. You know, it's just so true. And as you were talking, I could hear from your how this thing of growing up in an alcoholic family, we always say, you need to forget about it. It doesn't matter. So often we say it doesn't make any difference. I just put it behind me. Oh, no, there's no way. I mean, the things that we've learned with, that we've grown up with, become part of the way we cope with life. And you just explained how the manipulation and control had come in and it affected your choices and your decisions. So how do you move away from that?
Definitely by working the 12-step program and the tools that we get in the program.
Now you need to help people to know what that means for those people who don't
Okay. Support groups, many support groups work on the same principle, but they do it slightly differently. I've learned over the years. I've heard there is about 300 groups that use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They have adapted it to them, to their own situation or their own problem. And you know, for me, the tools is, I can't speak for other programs, but the program that I'm in work the slogans. And you were speaking, Nana, about step 1, 2, and 3. Those are my favorite steps because I'm a believer and I have to give everything that I struggle with to my God. My Redeemer. So when I'm in a difficult situation, which sometimes is every day, I'll give this problem, because I'm powerless over this problem or this place or this thing, and I will give it to God. But first, I'm powerless, but God is not. Step three says, give it to him, and I do that. And of course, when things get tough, you know, the word is always there to guide us.
Mm.
And one of my favorite ones, of course, is Philippians 4, verse 13, that says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Mm. Mm.
And, yes, we get new strength when we think we can't anymore. We just get new strength. And then you know where it comes from.
Mm. Absolutely. Mm. Wow. You were mentioning step three. It also says, I give my life and my will over to him. And that's part of the surrendering part, right? Where I need to figure out how in this practical situation now do I give my will to him? How do I give my life with the issues that I'm having today over to him? And that also, you were also mentioning the slogans. Could you mention one or two of the slogans that you often use?
My favorite slogan is let go and let God.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's to me like doing step one, two, and three.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, my
practical
other
situation.
One,
quickly, if you can give me a practical situation of where what shows what you need to let go of.
Like if you see your son getting onto a motorbike and he's been drinking.
Ooh.
You know, mm-hmm. that is very real for me. And I can just say, I give my son over to you,
wow.
mm-hmm. God, and I let go because
sure.
you love him more than I love him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for a person who's not a Christian, who's not in the program, they might think you are irresponsible, right? I'm not saying you are,
yes.
but I'm saying people who don't understand because they don't know how we've tried over and over to save and to rescue. And where we need
yeah.
to get to a place where we can just give it over, where we need to surrender. It also
how?
Reminds me of the serenity prayer, you know.
Exactly. And how can I take control of that person? He's a grown-up person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't
exactly.
stop him. He's
exactly.
physically stronger than me.
Yeah.
It's not a little child in primary school
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that I can stop.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah,
it really brings me to the serenity prayer that says, Lord, help me to accept the things I cannot change. Help me to
absolutely.
Change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm,
eh?
What yeah. a powerful prayer that we've
mm,
got.
We do that all the time.
It just helps you to focus, you know?
Yeah.
Let's
absolutely.
Focus. Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
You know, so, Vanita, I also in one of your shares just now, you were talking about your father was an alcoholic, and you had said to yourself, like I also had said to myself, my father was an alcoholic, I'm not going to be an alcoholic. But eventually I had addictive tendencies, and I passed those on to our children.
Mm.
So what effect and how do family members usually, what do they usually tend to do in your experience?
You know, as you said earlier on, I'm going to speak about my real life.
Mm.
So I am very grateful to say that in my family, or my siblings, none of us are alcoholic or any other problem like gambling
mm.
or
mm.
It's to me just by the grace of God.
Absolutely.
But I, with my own son, unfortunately my youngest son, it is a problem.
Mm. Mm.
So, but they did, sometimes they do have other problems that I can see because they're not all in a 12-step program.
Mm.
And I can't change them and tell them to go to one. I've suggested it.
Mm-hmm.
But people do what they feel okay
mm-hmm.
with. And we have to just accept other people's choices.
Mm-hmm.
Can't force people
right.
to do things they don't want to do.
And you
yeah.
know what you said that, sorry, you said none of you guys are alcoholics or have addictive tendencies, but you married an alcoholic. And that's often what happens, eh? Because often
yes.
in a coupleship, the one person is the one with the addict, with the addiction, and the other one is the co-addict, the one that's helping or enabling that person.
Mm.
So
yeah,
that's what
so,
I see in our family as well and many other families, that so often, if there's not an active addiction, there's often a co-addiction that leads to the person actually marrying an addict or a potential addict.
Mm, mm.
Yes. Or sometimes they're just workaholics.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are just absent.
Mm.
They are there, but they're not there. I don't know how to put it.
I totally can relate to that, Vanita, because I didn't become an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic, and I said, I'm not going to become an alcoholic, but my addictive tendencies came from my father, and I was an absent father as well, just like my father was an absent father.
It's the disengagement.
Being disengaged, not being emotionally available to my wife, to Suki, to the children. So that is our tendencies, you know, our typical natural default tendencies. And I would like to add, if we are not in a journey or on a journey of restoration and recovery, because those things changed as soon as I was able to embark on a journey of restoration and joined communities in which I can experience restoration.
And with that, you don't say it's perfect now, right?
Yeah,
because
no,
I mean,
it's not
me
perfect.
Too, I'm a co-addict or the enabler one. Yes. I used to try and rescue, though. But there are still times when I find going back to their default behavior, in spite of the fact that I've been in these programs for how long. But it just becomes easier, especially in times of high stress and high struggle. That's when I often find myself into my anxiety, going back into my default behavior, getting into my controlling behavior again. But it's easier for me to admit it. It's easier for me to recognize it. And that takes me to the step six, step seven, where we admit that we had made a mistake and we make amends. And we don't need to stay in that. We can acknowledge it. We can get out of that. Do you have something to comment on that just before the end of the program, because we need to end soon?
Yeah, to be able to be honest with yourself.
Very important.
Yeah, I know. In our program, we say our slogan is, we talk about reality, restoration, and redemption in the face of addiction. So we talk really about the realities. But Vanita, thank you very much for joining us today. And it's so great to have you. And remind the listeners that they can send their comments or questions to Frederick Suki, Frederick, F-R-E-D, and Suki, S-O-E-K-I-E, at kpulpa.co.za. And if you missed a program in the past or this halfway through this one, get to the podcasts at kpulpit.com/podcasts/IntoMeC.
And if you would like your friend to listen to this and you heard something very helpful that Vanita shared, please pass it on to them. Share it with your friends. Till next time, God bless.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.